right, before we get to some quarterback things, my friend Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com, Pick Six Podcast, and also And With the First Pick podcast he does with Rick Spielman, and we're going to talk more about that than anything else. First of all, if I told you my top five teams were in order, 1 through 5, Detroit, San Francisco, Philadelphia, Miami, and Kansas City, what would you say?
I like it. I like it. I like the love for Detroit. They're such a fun team to watch. And I've been saying it I asked the question in August, and I giggle every time I say it subsequently, but Jared Goff is probably the second best quarterback in the NFC, and Jalen Hurts is the number one. It's probably Brock Purdy, even though he had a stinker of a game and some pretty bad weather in Cleveland. But Jared Goff is the primary reason that team has been so much fun to watch. And I give Brad Holmes, the GM, a lot of credit for bringing him to Detroit from Los Angeles, where Brad Holmes came from, and having the faith and the vision that perhaps no one else on planet Earth did. Because who among us didn't think that you leave Sean McVay to go to the vast wasteland that is Detroit to rediscover your career? Offensive line is probably the best in football. Playmakers up and down the roster offensively, and the defense is playing lights out this year. And I love it. I love that Detroit is getting the love they deserve, and they're really fun football team to watch.
So let me ask you about the Jared Goff thing, because I've talked about it before. So Sean McVay essentially threw him into the trash. He didn't believe that Jared Goff could get him back to a Super Bowl. And now the short sample size was that Matthew Stafford was the quarterback when the Rams won the Super Bowl. So certainly right off the bat, Sean McVay was correct. But he couldn't wait to get rid of Jared Goff. How did Goff become what Sean McVay couldn't turn him into?
You know, I've been thinking about that a lot, because you sort of touched on it. I covered the draft as well, and the hardest position to figure out is the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. Jared Goff's the first overall pick. He came into that Jeff Fisher system, and Jeff Fisher got fired, I think, 1 year into Jared Goff's tenure. Sean McVay showed up. And sometimes, and you know, we live in a world where we don't want to wait on things. Sometimes you have to be patient with young quarterbacks. And I think that Jared Goff was good under Sean McVay, but he's certainly not playing the level he is now. And a lot of it, it's just at the end of the day, it's reps and experience. And you watch Jared Goff play now, and he doesn't play sped up. And by that, I mean, mm-hmm. he's very patient when he drops back. He understands where the ball needs to go pre-snap. He typically gets it there post-snap. He's incredibly accurate. And when you're playing, and you know, we see this, credit to Bryce Young for playing well this weekend, but the previous four games were, it didn't look like Alabama Bryce. And I think part of that is just the speed of the game. The players are so much better. The windows are so much tighter. Your guys aren't getting open like Alabama receivers could open. And when you look at that with Jared Goff, you feel like it clicked. And maybe the pressure of not being in L.A. was part of it. I don't know. I think a lot of it has to do with experience. And you know this, Adam. If you don't have, no matter what kind of athlete you are, if you don't have belief in your abilities and you lose that confidence, it can go south in a hurry. And I think all the things have come together perfectly for Jared Goff in Detroit, which, again, is funny to say out loud, but that's Dan Campbell.
Ryan Wilson, CBSSports.com, at Ryan Wilson CBS on Twitter, or whatever we're calling it these days. Also, not only the Pick Six podcast, because we talked to Will Brinson yesterday, With the First Pick, and you do this with Rick Spielman, a former NFL general manager, and I want to play a clip that I think I texted you about it last week, that I found, I mean, super fascinating. I believe this comes from last week, when I know he is high on Caleb Williams, the quarterback out of USC, and you asked him, we ran through it. I want to play the clip so people get a chance to hear what I heard. This is you and Rick Spielman talking about Caleb Williams as a prospect.
Last year's draft class, Caleb was the first quarterback taken, right?
Yes.
The one before that, Trevon Walker went first, so certainly there. What about 2021 when Trevor Lawrence went first? You taking Trevor or Caleb?
Caleb.
Nice. 2020, Joe Burrow or Caleb?
Caleb.
Wow, look at that, Debo. 2019's Kyler, you're taking Caleb there. 2018's Baker, you're taking Caleb there. So you probably have to go back to, I'll go to 2012, Andrew Luck or Caleb?
That's a toss-up for me. Because
I
thought Andrew Luck was one of those generational franchise quarterbacks. But I would be real close, but I would probably go with Luck just ahead of Caleb. But right there, 1A and 1B.
All right, there's more to that we might get to. But that Andrew Luck, who was the perfect college quarterback prospect, I mean, you couldn't have dreamed up in central casting a better prospect coming out of college into the NFL. And if he had stayed healthy, I think we're talking about a Hall of Fame quarterback. And he's like weighing luck versus Caleb Williams. Is he really that type of a prospect?
It's crazy because in the moment you could hear it in my voice. I was like, oh my gosh, you passed on Burrow and Trevor and you have to go back to 2012. And when you watch Caleb play, you see a better version of Patrick Mahomes coming out of Texas Tech.
Wow.
And that is what is so crazy. And part of the thing, and Rick went on to talk about this, is that we went back to 98. He took Caleb over Peyton Manning in 98. And the reason is this. Today's quarterback can't be a pocket passer. He can be, but it's incredibly hard to have success. And Caleb gives you that Patrick Mahomes type versatility. Now, it's sort of funny that we're having this conversation on the heels of the stinker that they put up against Notre Dame where they got the brakes beat off of them. But the thing is, that we went back and we talked about it this morning on the podcast, me and Rick. So I went back and watched the game. Caleb made a terrible decision, one after the next in the first half, three interceptions. The second half, he looked pretty good. And I gave him credit for battling through the beating, number one. And number two, not quitting. Because sometimes when you're at that level, college or pro, you just like, you know what? I'm good. I'll see you next week. He kept fighting, and I think that's what's going to stick with people when they go back and watch those games. But he is special, and he is a different kind of special. And the Patrick Mahomes comparisons are fair, and I think it's fair to say he is better than Patrick Mahomes when Pat was coming out of college.
How does he like Drake May as a prospect for the NFL?
Rick likes him more than I do, and Rick understands obviously football better than I do. He was in the league. I love that you immediately agree with that. He was
I didn't. I was actually going to say I don't know about that. I have great respect for Ryan Wilson. I didn't invite Rick Spielman on the show.
I told Rick he couldn't come on the show. just you and me. But look, he has seen a ton and he knows a ton. And the thing that he points out, because I say, look, I like Drake May. He's going to be the second quarterback taken, but he has a handful of throws each game where you go, you know what? Those are interceptions at the next level. Yeah. Maybe do something differently. And he will counter rightly. He say, here's the deal, man. The offensive line is a mess. This guy is carrying the team on his shoulders. Until 2 weeks ago, there was no Josh Downs type receiver to throw the ball to. They have Tez Walker, who's been a breakout revelation for Carolina. And he certainly did that against the U over the weekend. And you're doing a lot as Drake May with a little around you, and you have to factor that in. And I wanted to prod him a little bit. I said, okay, well, we were talking about that last year at this time 12 months ago with Will Levis. And he said, look, this is a different conversation, which I agree with, because you had to squint to try to find the good things with Will Levis. You can see wide-eyed how good Drake May is going to be. He just has to be in a system that supports him. And, you know, for example, don't go to Chicago Bears as they're currently constituted.
Right.
But go to a place where you have playmakers around you, can protect you, and do the things you do. So he likes Drake a little more than I do, but we both agree he's a top five pick all day long.
All right. First of all, here's what Drake May does not put mayonnaise in his coffee, and he does not eat the banana with the skin on. So right off the bat, he's way better than Will Levis. I would say this about North Carolina. Offensive line may be better than giving credit. And I think there are more weapons other than just Tez Walker. There's McCullum. The tight ends are really good, and the running game is good. I actually think you're going to see their offense go bananas here, speaking of bananas, over the next 6 weeks of the season. I really do. I think their offense is going to kick into a much higher gear than they currently have. It brings me back to the Panthers, and I think you and I have talked about it, that last year was probably not the right year to trade from 9-1. To get the quarterback. I think Bryce is going to be fine. I thought there were a lot of good things that Bryce did against Miami, and he's clearly got chemistry with Adam Thielen and none with anybody else. But last year, trading from 9-1 was crazy.
Yeah, and we're starting to hear things in the media. Stephen Holder for ESPN, who covered Frank Reich in Indianapolis, tweeted this out last week, that it was a well-known secret that owner David Tepper was pushing for Bryce and maybe the staff was pushing for CJ.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard like in March that CJ was probably going to be the guy. And then, you know, we did the pro day tour and you know, things sort of shake themselves out and I didn't think much of it. And Bryce is my QB1. I like Bryce. And as you noted, Adam, he's playing better.
Yeah.
Not a lot around him.
Nothing.
And I think, I don't know if CJ has the type of success in Carolina that he's having in Houston right now, but it's just, I get it. I get the conversation of, okay, look, we went from 9-1. and we got the smallest quarterback to go first overall in human history. And, oh, by the way, and it's Rick gets angry when I mention do teams tank, because he's like, it's pretty hard to tank 12 months out for a quarterback like Caleb, because sometimes the quarterback doesn't end up being Caleb, it ends up being Will Levis or whatever. So those are, it's a lot of moving parts, but you did give up a ton, and you're not seeing the immediate return. Frank Reich is having to answer questions each week about his meetings on Monday with the owner.
Yep.
Why can't they win? Why is he giving up play calling duty? So it's been a confluence of terribleness for the organization. The lone bright spot, a few bright spots, is that Bryce is playing better. Thielen has established himself. Now you need the Jonathan Mingos and the Hayden Hurst of the world to sort of step up and help out as well.
But in my opinion, what they should do is not worry about whatever happens this year and sell it for parts, man. Brian Burns, Jeremy Chinn, where they're not even using on defense at this point. He plays less than half the snaps. He's a starting safety and had a great first 2 years in the league, and now they're barely using him. Sell them all for parts. Just see what you can get. They have to rebuild this team through the draft. There's no other way for this team to get better. They might have to get worse before they get better, and then by the time they do, they're going to have to pay the quarterback, whether it's Bryce or somebody else. So it's a tough cycle to be in. They're in kind of a Chicago Bears cycle.
But you know what, Adam? They could be in a Houston Texans cycle, and that's the encouraging stuff, that what they've been able to do down there. I'm not saying you need to change coaching staff. So I want to see what Thomas Brown does as a play caller. I think that'll be interesting. But you're right. If you can sell the parts off now, because you're not winning the division now, let's be honest, and have a plan to rebuild the team. Now, the other issue is, and I don't know to the degree to which this is true, but when you have an owner who has his fingers in the pie more often than the other owners, that can also complicate things, because you're now having an active owner. And you know, the owner is the boss at the end of the day, but some owners are passive and some are active in terms of their project that is the NFL team they own. And that can make things a little more difficult to get to the place you want to get to in the speed in which you want to get there.
No question. David Tepper is, he's hands-on and he's impatient and he has not been able to have the self-discipline to stick to a plan. He just hasn't. They've changed. How many different quarterbacks did they try in his first 4 years as owners? I mean, it was a comedy. It had four different quarterbacks in the last 4 years. And it's all because the owner has been, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. I don't know why people like that don't give the experts the freedom to do what the experts are trained to do. They think they know all the time, but
when you're worth $60 billion, you probably have done some things correct in your life, and you probably think that you know better than most people.
Exactly. And that is the mindset. Ryan Wilson, you know better than most people, and I appreciate your time. That's why we call you.
Thank you, Adam. Have a good one, brother.
You got it. Take care. Ryan Wilson at Ryan Wilson CBS on Twitter.